Do that again. Do it again.
Hello and welcome.
What is this?
Welcome. Welcome to Daddy Square Podcast.
Oh, God. Yes, that's what this is.
So let's first introduce ourselves. I'm Jan.
Wait, I'm having espresso. And I'm Alex.
And we're married.
We are.
We have two kids, twins, twiblings.
Twiblings. Nobody. I think that's a totally made up term. I don't think
you
anybody.
Think?
Yeah, I don't think anybody.
Even if it is, I like it.
I like it too.
Yeah.
Google it. We're sitting in my office, by the way, so
yes,
apparently...
at Warner Brothers.
Right.
How entertainment industry of us.
I know. It's required by the gay... It's a gay rule.
Gay LA.
Well, apparently what I do at Warner Brothers is I record the Daddy Square podcast in my office at 9:10 in the morning on a Wednesday. But generally speaking, I do a lot of technology stuff here. And I like it. And it's in Burbank, which is only about 25 minutes from home, which is good.
Yes. And I'm Jan, as we said, and I do branding and marketing usually. And, you know, logos and stuff and design stuff and website stuff and a lot of tech stuff as well. So we're kind of a geeky couple, basically. Sometimes we do joke about HTML and CSS at home in bed.
Wow, that's so sexy. CS sexy.
How did we meet, Alex? Do you want to tell them just the story of the nutshell?
Yeah, we met in synagogue.
Of course we did.
I
never go to synagogue.
In Israel. Well, it's the gay equivalent of synagogue, which is we met at the gym.
The gym, yes.
Yes, I was living in Israel for a little while, and I met Jan there, and we lived together for about a year, and then we moved back here to LA.
Yeah, and it was like almost 10 years ago that we moved to LA.
It was.
And then I discovered West Hollywood.
Yes, which
for
is
the first time.
Apparently a portion of LA. Yes.
Daddy Square is a blog that I started following a column, or should I say an op-ed, that I did for Huffington Post. I think it was 2 years ago, and it got a lot of responses.
You guys can, those of you who are listening can tell that Jan is originally from New Jersey.
I'm an immigrant. So it got a lot of responses, and then I started this blog, which also, you know, I got some feedbacks and comments and stuff like that, and a lot of gay fathers who kind of approached me and said, yeah, you know, it's kind of, you're speaking the truth.
We speak the truth.
Because most of the people are always focusing about saying how much and how great fatherhood is, but the truth is...
You won't get any of that here.
It's difficult. It's effing difficult. And I started this blog, and then, you know, the idea of the podcast came about, and... You know, why not?
Why not?
It's a trend.
It's a trend.
We have the equipment. I used to have a radio station. I still have a radio station.
When he says we have the equipment, he doesn't mean as gay men, although we do also have the equipment as gay men. No, look, I mean, we're not, you know, neither one of us has a degree in any of this
in
stuff.
Podcast broadcasting.
No, I meant in, you know, raising kids or any of that stuff. That's why we're interviewing people who... are experts in this area, but we have the expertise that comes from almost 3 years of being thrown into the freezing cold water of poop. Ah, the freezing cold water of poop. That should be the name of this podcast episode.
Over the course of this series, we'll be talking to people about specific issues that may arise for gay couples having children. We'll bring on gay dads to tell their stories, and we hope that our guests can serve as some sort of a mentors to our listeners in some way.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And another thing that's important is that please rate and review us. That's
oh, yeah,
really
please rate and review us.
To increase the visibility of this podcast and to help reach... does it look like I'm reading it?
Yes, of course it does. No, it comes naturally.
Rate and review us to increase the visibility of this podcast and help us reach all those dads and maybe gay men who think about becoming dads. I think it helps.
This medication has some side effects. The side effects include... Anyway,
should we move forward to
we
today?
Should move forward.
Yeah.
What are we
so today we're
to going to
speak with Michael McCatty. Yeah, did I say it correctly?
Oh, crap.
Oh no.
Well, I don't know. McCatty. I think it was McCatty, but it says it in the interview. We have actually already done the interview.
Yes.
So we're not going to cheat and lie to you. We pre-recorded it, and then we do this introduction. But he does correct us on the pronunciation. So you'll hear it shortly.
He's a gay dad, and he's also a family therapist specializing in identity and LGBT people.
Yeah. He was good. It was a good interview for our first interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought
so. We talked to him about what can happen to a couple's relationship when they bring kids, and when is it a good time to seek therapy. You know, we said that some couples decide to go to therapy when it's already too late.
Just, you know, being human in general, there's a tendency after a while to start to feel bored in the relationship. There's a tendency for people to start to getting maybe too comfortable in how they communicate with each other. So they're starting to kind of maybe like not be as effective in their communication.
I tried to challenge him on that because I really wanted to get him to slam his fists on the table and say, absolutely everybody should go to couples therapy when they're going to have kids.
I know what you meant. You meant that, you know, when people know that they're about to have some sort of a big change in their lives, it may be useful to consult with somebody like a therapist because it's hard.
Why do you
have
to soften
something?
Why are you softening?
We're going towards something that we don't know, right?
Yeah. So I just want to be real straight up. I understand that there are many people who can't afford it, and for them, of course, you know, there's nothing that I can say. But I'm just going to say right here, anyone who is pregnant or getting pregnant, you know, gay or straight, who doesn't go,
especially gay who get pregnant,
yeah, well, right, that's well, go you go to t- you go to Good Morning America then, but I mean, you the idea that you would not go and see a couples therapist during the pregnancy and after the kid or kids are born, I think it's crazy. I think it's crazy because you need somebody to work through this with you. Because it's just too much craziness and change in your life to have happen at one time without professional help.
Yes, and also, so that we talked with him about that, and we also talked about sex.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
Baby.
Yeah.
So stress has a huge role on our, you know, libido. It really does impact that. But it's not always the symptom. Sometimes, you know, couples go through lulls, and, you know, it could literally be that, you know, one person just not feeling attracted anymore or feeling like there's no longer a sort of chemistry.
We talked about how, I guess what he feels like, the changes that people have in sexuality are not necessarily so much about, you know, the pressures of the relationship. I think this is what he's saying, but can be an indicator that there's, you know, sometimes it's just that people are gradually over time slowing down. Sometimes I think, I don't know, and I don't know if he said this, but I think it's really interesting. Sometimes having kids forces you to have less sex because you're just so busy taking care of the kids, and that break from having so much sex can be an opportunity, for good or for bad, for you to sort of step back and look at the sexuality of the relationship. And that can be great because you can suddenly say, oh my God, I forgot how much I'm crazy about this man. It can also make you say, oh, you know, this really has not been working for a long time. So it can cause some shifts. I don't know if he talked about that or I'm just making it up right now.
Yeah, if I would recommend something to people who, you know, in relationship, whether there's kids or not, in relationship, and they feel, or at least one of the sides feels like there's a frustration about lack of sex, I think it's really, really good to go to couples therapy. Because you learn in couples therapy to kind of rediscover each other. And understand each other more. So it kind of helps. And like Michael said, it's usually an indicator of something else. It's not like the problem.
That it can be a signal, I should say. It can be a signal that something is off in the relationship, which can be worked on and, you know, potentially resolved.
This episode of Daddy Square brought to you by the American Psychiatric Association.
Okay, the interview will be coming up in just a second. But Alex, let's talk about something that happened with the kids this week.
Okay.
So I was really excited, and I know it's kind of controversial, but our kids watched a full movie beginning
to end.
Why is
this controversial?
Because people don't like...
Oh, it's too soon or something?
No, I think that people don't... Like, there's a taboo around sitting kids in front of television for a long time.
I see. Well, you mean as opposed to just Velcroing them together as we usually do and leaving the house?
I don't know, but... I thought that so they watched Toy Story, the first one,
right,
beginning to end,
right,
and I was overjoyed.
So was
because
I?
Our kids, you know, they first of all they don't have patience to kind of sit for more than 20 minutes, and you know, it doesn't matter whether it's watching TV or playing with something with a toy. It doesn't matter. They don't have the patience to kind of sit down in one place.
Yep.
And it's exhausting, and sometimes letting them have the hour where you can just, you know, go around the house, do the dishes, check your emails, you know, like hot guys on Instagram, stuff like that that you usually want to do but don't get time to do that, I found it refreshing.
Look, I mean, totally... I think those are two different things. One is absolutely any frickin' thing we can find so that we can get a break from the kids for 20 minutes or half an hour is, you know, sent from God. But I actually think that the watching of the movie was a special thing by itself. You know, Toy Story is a very sweet movie. though I work for Warner Brothers, which is, you know, not...
Shh, don't say it here.
I'm not allowed to say it.
no,
Disney being, you know, a competitor, a lesser competitor to Warner Brothers, of course. It's a great movie, and it has a lovely message, and it's very sweet. I actually think that it establishes more of an ability for the kids to develop focus. They're sitting in front of a TV, it's true, but they're not watching some crazy, noisy, you know, entertainment piece that lasts 2 minutes and then moves on to another one on YouTube. They're sitting for a full 90 minutes watching a story unfold. And I actually think that's pretty healthy. I'm very happy with it. And last night...
And we also discovered this new question that they ask. What's going to happen now?
Oh, yeah, what's going to happen now?
That's
what's
going to
happen now? Yeah, and last night I sat on the couch and one of the, these are twins, just so that you guys will remember it. These are twins. One of them sat on one side of me and the other sat on the other, and we watched it together, and it was great. It was a really good experience for me, and I think they loved it too. Of course, we're going to be watching it about 750 more times, unfortunately, yes. But there you go.
Okay, so I want to, you know, podcast, as far as my experience goes, is all about interactions. So I want to pose a question to our listeners.
Okay.
I'm used to say readers for some reason, you know, being a blogger and all. And it's about that. What do you think, is it really healthy to let the kids watch TV for, or watch a movie for age of three?
Should parents sit a child down at the age of three in front of a feature-length movie? What are the pros and cons for the kid and for the parent of doing that?
Yeah.
Right.
And also, recommendations other than Toy Story will be gladly received.
It's true. You know what's interesting, by the way, about all of these movies is that you think that they're all really sweet, and they are sweet, but you don't realize that for a three-year-old, in order to create any sense of a storyline, there will be scenes that are scary. There's like nothing you could Disney, in every Disney movie, there's something that might scare a three-year-old, and figuring out what that is ahead of time can be a good thing. Maybe skip that scene, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we would love to hear back from people how they feel about that idea and ideas for movies.
So contact us on Twitter at Yanir Dekel or on Facebook at Daddy Square. These are the ways that you can actually contact us and let us know what you think. should or shouldn't we do this? Okay, so I think we're ready.
I love that we post such an incredibly like challenging question. There's going to be so much vicious argument about it. Seriously, we should ask them about giving our kids booze. That's the real question. To booze the children or not to booze the children?
At Yanir Dekel on Twitter or on Facebook, Daddy Square. And now I think we're ready for the interview with Michael.
Let's do it.
Okay, so let's start. First of all, I want you to kind of tell us about yourself, who you are.
Mm-hmm. My name is Michael McAtee. I'm a gay stepfather and a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I've been in private practice for about 3 years here in Manhattan Beach.
What kind of clients do you have?
What are their names?
Yeah. It's a pretty broad spectrum. I see teenagers up through, you know, adults. I see individuals mostly. My specialty would be working with gay men.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So in your work, how much is it from the books and how much is it from personal experience?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know exactly the ratio, but I would say that I definitely utilize both. Mm-hmm. Always, you know, I think they sort of inform each other, because what's in the books is often informed by, you know, clinical experience,
right,
what people gather throughout their careers. So, you know, I try to utilize both, and hopefully they inform each other.
My therapist will not talk about himself.
Mm-hmm,
he
mm-hmm.
just won't. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Will you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after all, you're they know you're gay.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh yeah, always.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's okay for you. You feel that it's okay for you to reflect some of your own experience as a way of increasing the confidence or the connection that you have with the client?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel this may be my own personal opinion, but I think it's also been backed up by some research on this, actually, that, you know, LGBT people feel, you know, more comfortable with people who are comfortable in their sexuality, you know, who are maybe open about their sexuality. So I will say that I am very upfront from the beginning about my sexuality, and I feel like that's important to affirm that I'm a gay therapist, and that, you know, that sort of imbues me with some experiences that maybe other therapists might not have directly.
What would be your advice on how, if you feel like you need somebody to talk to or somebody to help you understand what's going on in your life right now, what's the best way to find a therapist that will suit you?
Well, you know, I think doing some research on the different types of therapies might be helpful, because there's so many different types of therapies. And I think the last count was there's like over 2,000 schools of therapy. So, I mean, obviously you're not going to like understand all 2,000 different approaches, but maybe like thinking about the type of support you're looking for. You know, are you someone who wants that sort of direct feedback where, you know, you're being told, like you're given suggestions on how to handle situations? Or are you wanting therapy where the therapist is kind of more more sort of a co-pilot, in the sense where, you know, they'll just kind of steer you back on course if you start to get off track, you know?
So how would you distinguish between, as somebody who's looking, how would I know about, with that, maybe in the first session I could ask?
Yeah.
Is there any way of knowing prior to that people are of different approaches?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, some therapists have websites where they talk about their approach. Certainly, you know, when you make that first phone call, you can ask them what their approach is. A lot of the times therapists will say that they're eclectic or integrative, which means that, you know, they kind of take from a variety of schools. Mm-hmm. And so that might be actually the safest if you're not sure which approach is right for you. But I say, like, if you have a negative experience with, you know, a therapist, that doesn't necessarily mean that therapy isn't for you. Yeah. You know, it means that just that particular person maybe wasn't the right fit.
I think we should kind of naturally move to the to our subject today,
okay,
which is more about relationship and marriage, marriage therapy. When do you think a couple yeah. should consider going to therapy?
Again, that's really subjective. I would say that tends to be more often than not that couples wait till it's too late to go to therapy. You know, if they're really, really struggling, there's a tendency for couples, straight or gay or lesbian or transsexual, or whatever, just, you know, being human in general, there's a tendency after a while to start to feel bored in the relationship. There's a tendency for people to start to getting maybe too comfortable in how they communicate with each other. So they're starting to kind of maybe like not be as effective in their communication. Sometimes couples digress into sort of a playful passive aggressiveness in their you know, relationship, and that can be sort of like the tip of the iceberg. And so, you know, I would say, like, if one or both couple, and we're talking about traditional couples, we're not talking about polyamorous, and but you know, in a sort of dyadic couple situation, if one or both are starting to feel dissatisfied in the relationship, I think that's the perfect time to start to talk about going to therapy. You know, and if the other partner isn't open to it, you know, still I would say go to a therapist, you know, and get your own
by
therapy.
Yourself.
Yeah.
And when the child comes into the couple, it kind of shakes the relationship in a way. What do you think a couple should, you know, do between themselves to kind of work on their relationship?
You know, a lot of times people go into the raising of a family with maybe without clear expectations, you know? So as much as you can, if you're a prospective parent thinking about having children, thinking about like what your expectations are for having children. Are you expecting, you know, your partner to be a perfect parent with you? Are you expecting, you know, the two of you to always agree on everything related to parenting and disciplining? Because, you know, that really shapes the dynamic, you know, between the two parents. If, you know, after you've already had kids and you're starting to feel, you know, this kind of like, wait, where has the time gone?
Yeah.
You know, what are we doing? Then, yeah, I would say it's time to reevaluate and kind of maybe hit restart as far as being a parental unit. You know, how do you want to redefine what it means to the both of you to be parents?
Obviously, you know I have a bias, right? because it has been so beneficial to us to have that during the ongoing crisis.
Mind you, Alex, we fired our first couple therapists.
Well, we fired him after the first session. That's different. That was different. We will not say his name. But you know, I guess, again, I understand that in your position, you don't want to come off seeming like everyone should go to couples therapy.
Right. Yeah.
But I do wonder whether you think that a couple, even a really well-adjusted couple, can be prepared.
Well, you know, I think therapy can certainly help with making people aware of maybe their blind spots. We all have them, you know. So I think talking to a professional obviously can be helpful regardless of who you are. But I think like the idea that like everyone should be in therapy, I can't necessarily, you know, espouse that. But yeah, I do, because, you know, it's a financial, there's a financial cost. And I think, you know, there's like an ethics around the profession, that, you know, should we be treating people if they don't need to be treated?
So another thing that I, at least to me, it always sounds like a couple who needs to go to therapy, is that lack of sex. So after a while, we don't have sex anymore. When my friends are saying that to me, I always think like, sex is not the problem. Sex is like a symptom. Would you agree with that? And what do you think it's usually a symptom of, if it is?
Yeah, that's a really complex issue, you know, sexuality, because it's tied into so much of who we are. Not just as gay people, once again, but just as human beings, like our sexuality is intricately intertwined with our identities and personalities. So it can be a symptom that, you know, something is going on in the relationship, or just it's something is going on in one of the partner's lives. Maybe work is really stressful, or maybe something is going on in the family, you know, that's stressing people out. So stress has a huge role on our, you know, libido. It really does impact that. But it's not always the symptom. Sometimes, you know, couples go through lulls, and you know, it could literally be that, you know, one person is just not feeling attracted anymore, or feeling like there's no longer a sort of chemistry like that. Yeah. So that would be a situation where, you know, I think definitely going to your own therapy and trying to process
because
that.
I believe it's solvable. Mm-hmm. I mean, for us it mm-hmm. is.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just say
well,
that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't point to how it was solved, but things got much better. Couples yeah. therapy certainly had something to do with it. What I find so fascinating is what I hear on all the comedy specials, mm-hmm. right, and everywhere else, is that as soon as the kids come, whatever sex there was is completely gone.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the most common view. Mm-hmm. But there is something, and I can understand why, in terms of time and stress and the other things you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, and I don't know if we get into this, but there are aspects of teamwork associated mm-hmm. with parenting
mm-hmm.
that, at least in our case, seems, at least to me, the reverse of what I've heard from everybody else, where, you know, mm-hmm. you have kids and everything just goes to hell.
I want to give people, you know, who experience that, a little bit of, you know, optimism that it is solvable.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it absolutely is, because, you know, it's a signal that, you know, something is off in the relationship. That it can be a signal, I should say. It can be a signal that something is off in the relationship, which can be worked on and, you know, potentially resolved. But not always, right? So there are no absolutes. I think that, you know, sex can literally just be, you know, sex. And sometimes it's one person is just not really feeling like having sex,
yeah.
you know? So we all go through that.
From what I hear, again, from my own experience and my gay friends' experience, mm-hmm. is that after a while you just get bored with a person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the couples just break up at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They think
mm-hmm.
like, okay, I'm not attracted to him anymore. That's not that.
Mm-hmm.
As if there's a notion that somebody will come that we're going to be attracted to them the whole life, and it's just going to go up. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that what happened with us, at least, is that we kind of rediscovered a new way of looking at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a sort of work that is done in therapy, no?
Yes, yeah, I think looking at each other with fresh eyes, you know,
yeah.
can be really good. Sometimes in relationships, you know, like you had said, there is a sort of lack of sexual stimulation, right? Like
yeah.
two people just start to kind of drift apart. Sometimes that, you know, can be an indicator that maybe it's not the right, you know, relationship anymore. But other times it may be useful to talk about like ways of spicing up the sexual relationship, and that can include, you know, different forms of novelty and things like that.
Yeah.
If you know, the partners, gay or straight, are open to, you know, exploring other sexual partners with each other, that can sometimes really light the fuse, you know, sexually between the two, gay or straight, again, because this is not just a gay... This is not just a gay phenomenon. Like, straight couples also engage in this way. So there's a lot of options as far as, like, how people might try to spice up their sex life, you know.
I'm not doing the negligee. I'm not doing the flimsy negligee again.
Again.
It's a disaster. So the biggest fear I had is that we're going to fuck our kids up just as much as our parents did to us. Because we all blame our parents in some way. And
society.
And I wanted to ask your opinion. Is there something we can do or be aware when we are, you know, having kids and we don't want to repeat our parents' mistakes?
Yeah, well, definitely having children will bring up things from your own childhood. That's really interesting because I experienced this personally and then ended up talking to other parents and did research on this. And turns out it is actually a phenomenon that happens where there's kind of a synchronistic parallel between what age your children are at and sort of the developmental barriers that you encountered at that same age. So you may, you know, you may like start to kind of almost play out or reenact the things that were done to you with your children. It's almost unconscious. You're unconsciously just kind of replaying history. So in those cases, like if you're one of those parents who maybe had a, let's say, less than perfect childhood, which we all had a less than perfect childhood, you know, then going to therapy could definitely be something helpful for you to process whatever you experienced. Maybe it was traumatic, maybe it was abuse, you know, or just, I mean, I think being LGBT in general, we experience oppression and marginalization because we live in a heteronormative society. That means a society that really caters and is more validating of heterosexual relationships and families. So being an LGBT person, you know, you're more inclined to feel like who you are is wholly unworthy, unlovable, flawed, may even use words like sinful, you know, if you come from a religious background. So there's going to be those kind of inner complexes that are unconsciously affecting your feelings, your thoughts, and your behaviors, you know. So that would be a good thing to go to therapy for. A lot of times people aren't cognizant that they are having issues like that. It's unconscious. So that's where your partner would really like come in and maybe try to help, you know, and say like, you know, honey or sweetie, you know, I'm noticing that you keep, you know, lashing out at the kids about this particular issue. It doesn't seem like very reasonable. You know, is this something that you want to maybe talk to someone about? So that would be some way of going about it.
But then also one of the other things is the saying no to the kids. And this is like sometimes I feel that I say no to them and you know, it's kind of make them feel like they're defeated.
I think it's really all in the delivery of how you talk to your kids. A lot of times parents who have self-esteem issues, who maybe have insecurities, feel really guilty telling their kids no, because they want to be liked. Unconsciously, usually, it's that they want to be loved and liked by their children. We all do, right? We all want to be liked by our children. And telling your child no is going to make your child not like you.
Yeah.
So it can be triggering and it can be scary for some parents to tell their children no. And so as a result, when they say no, when they tell their children no, they don't realize it, but they are communicating through the tone of their voice or through their body language or something they're giving off is communicating to the kid that they should not, that the parent should not have to be telling their child no. That the parent does not want to have to be telling the child no. That the parent feels uncomfortable telling the child no. And so then that makes the child feel shameful. That makes the child feel like something is wrong with me, that my dad is having to tell me no. And he really doesn't look happy about having to do this. And it almost makes, it seems to bring him, it seems to bring him pain to have to tell me no. So that kids are extremely intuitive. They can read people better than anybody. They have to. It's a survival mechanism, right? They have to be able to tell who's safe and who's not safe. So it really does boil down to how you are approaching your children. Do you go to them and assume that parental role and be like, no, this is my job. So I'm going to show my child I love them by telling them no, because this will actually make them safer. It'll teach them something, and it'll show them that I care about them. I love them. So if you have that perspective, that mentality, it totally shifts the way you come off to your child. It's like the child will see you as like their superhero dad and be like, no, he's telling me no, even though I don't like it, but I kind of have to agree with it, you know. And children will actually say that when you like talk to them individually. As a therapist, I've talked to children about, like, you know, when their dad or mom told them no, and in private they'll be like, well, I kind of deserved it, you know. So they don't want to admit it to their parents, but, you know, they do realize when they've done something wrong.
It's amazing how much, you know, like the energy that we come with to the room to talk to our kids, how much of that energy actually speaks and not what we're saying.
Yeah, your children can definitely tell if their parent is afraid to parent. They, and as they get older, watch out. They will play that.
No, they already play that.
Yeah, they play. Yeah. Our kids are almost three, and they're virtuosi.
Yeah.
At least, but they play me like a violin.
Right. Yeah.
But then, how can we use our gayness as a, you know, as a positive thing? Because you talk about the fact that we're kind of, you know, not the mainstream parents.
Yes. Kids. Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, even though we're not mainstream, I mean, that has no impact on our ability to parent. Research has shown over and over and over again for years now that being an LGBT parent has no impact on the child's well-being or how well they develop into adults. So it's showed that, you know, that children fare just as well as heterosexual parents. What the research shows is that gay fathers, and I'll focus on gay fathers because that's been my area of expertise and research, is that gay fathers, because of their experiences being sort of ostracized and excluded from, you know, the dominant culture, they, you know, have had to overcome numerous adversities. And it's really shaped who they are in a lot of instances. So that ends up being a real strength that they bring into the role of being a father or a parent. They show their children how to overcome adversity just by them being themselves. They demonstrate how to create and construct a positive identity out of oppression. This can be sort of stereotypical, but I have noticed in my own experiences that a lot of the times gay fathers spend more time playing with their children than do like heterosexual fathers. And they tend to be willing to engage in more sort of non-binary sort of gender play. So they're willing to put on the heels and the wig, or they're willing to,
willing.
You know, or they love to, you know, who am I to say willing? Yeah.
Yeah, really.
And you know that we obviously live in Los Angeles and our city is much more accepting of, mm-hmm. you know, gay men, but still even here, we can come across some homophobia. Mm-hmm. And I give you an example that happened mm-hmm. to my kids, mm-hmm. that my kids were at some party. And people who we don't know mm-hmm. said to my friend, look at them, they're going only to the men. How do you suggest that, you know, people will who encounter homophobia as parents mm-hmm. Should, you know, deal with that?
Yeah, that's a really, I mean, scary thing when you first encounter that
yeah.
as a parent. You know, to feel like your child is being ridiculed for, you know, having two fathers or two mothers is so unfair, you know. And so I think first, like, understanding that there is going to be like that added level of stress being a same-sex parent, you know, because right now the culture hasn't evolved, you know, quite yet to a point where that won't happen. So being you know, realizing that this is an experience that you're experiencing, that other queer families experience, so you're not alone. This is something that happens a lot in schools and, you know, all over. And then from there, you know, I think not shutting down those feelings but talking about them is really key. To kind of process that experience, because that is a really, I mean, that sort of triggers old wounding, right?
Yeah.
Triggers like trauma from your past. So that's going to like bring up stuff for you, and you want to make sure that you are kind of in a calm mental state before you talk to your kids about it. Mm-hmm. Because if you're like triggered and feeling like really treated unfairly, which you know is true, but if you're bringing that into this discussion with your children are again going to intuitively pick up on that, mm-hmm. and they're going to maybe feel pressure to respond in a way that would make you happy, mm-hmm. and that's not really what your goal is. Your goal is to try to unpack the issue, to try to help them see all sides.
Okay, I think we had enough therapy. I want to know more.
Sorry. Yeah. Therapy session is over. And I think that's important, right? Because we do want to ask you questions about you. And we
yeah.
want
yeah.
to get your story.
Yeah, give us your story. So
yeah, please.
Okay. So my husband, name is Adam. And him and I met at work when I was 23. He was 22. We were both working at Equinox.
Oh wow.
A fitness okay. club. Yeah. Okay. I was working in the spa as a receptionist there and he was working in the Pilates studio as a Pilates instructor.
Oh cool.
And yeah, he asked me if I ever wanted a Pilates session and I was like, sure. So yeah, we
all those ropes and chains, and I've never done Pilates, but to me that's what it seems like Pilates
is.
Is little, it ropes?
I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of equipment there that looks like some stuff you might use for other... I'm just saying. I don't know. All right. Please
well,
continue.
Yeah, there are. There's like springs and
see?
Rods and elastic bands. I don't know.
It's like a Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had not really done much Pilates, so I was nervous, but he was really good, a very, very, you know, careful and attentive instructor, and I was happy. So then after that, he asked me he didn't really ask me out, but he asked if, like, we could hang out more often and sort of, like, be friends. And I was like, sure, you know, why not? So we did some yoga classes together. We did other kind of activities like that together. And we just started out as friends. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was that I was actually in a relationship and he was in a relationship.
Oh.
And I was living with the person I was dating. And he was also living with the person. He was dating, but actually he was married.
He was not very young to be married.
Yes, yeah, he was married, and he was married to a woman, I should specify. So he was married to a woman, and he had a one-year-old child.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Who is now your...
My stepdaughter.
Stepdaughter.
Yes.
Okay.
So that came out after that first initial meeting. Then he, you know, opened up to me about that. You know, he helped me deal with a lot of issues that I was going through with my ex-boyfriend, and I was there to kind of listen to him about, you know, what it was like to be married and have to be in the closet and all of that. So after a few months, it was really kind of synchronistic. He decided that he was ready to come out of the closet, and I decided that I was ready to leave that relationship I was in. And both happened around the same time, and it was just kind of like natural that him and I decided to move in together, initially as friends, okay, still thinking that we're just going to be friends. But then that quickly, you know, progressed to being more than friends. Mm-hmm. And then we've been together ever since.
So wait, you guys moved in together with your stepdaughter, or your stepdaughter was still with your... you guys moved in together?
So we moved in together, and at that time, his daughter was living with her mom.
I see. Okay.
And she would come over every weekend.
Okay.
So we would have her on weekends.
When she was one?
When she was one.
So how was it to have... You were very young.
I was 23.
and you had a 1-year-old for the weekend. Did you grow up with very little brothers or sisters?
I did.
You had little kids around you when you were.
My sister was 9 years younger than me, so I kind of helped, you know, raise her in a way too.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
So less shock.
It was, well, that's what I kept telling Adam. I was like, oh, I got this. You know, I'm used to it. I had a, you know, sister who's 9 years younger than me. But, you know, what I learned very quickly is every child's different.
Yeah.
So you think that you know what you're doing, and then, you know, here comes this, you know, unique person with their own personality and everything. So, and it was a unique situation, too. So that, you know, created its own sort of complexities.
Wow. Is the mom still in the picture?
Yes, so she has Emily still, you know, during the weeks, and then we have Emily every other weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, and how is it like, I mean, obviously it's a question for Adam more than for you, but
yeah,
to be married to a therapist, does he,
yeah,
does he, like, when you guys fight, does he come to you like, don't analyze me?
I mean, I don't know how he would answer. I mean, I think I have an idea of how he might answer that. You know,
do you really analyze him?
I think he would say yes. But I think he does a fair amount of analyzing of myself. You know, I, as a therapist, you know, I try to take what I'm learning every day and use that in my work. And so what that means is that I'm making mistakes and doing things that, you know, I would never recommend my patients do, you know, in privacy. And that's because I'm a human being too. And so as I'm making mistakes and all of that, I'm learning, and then I can kind of share that with people. But I think it really has helped me to normalize this whole experience of being a human being, that we are, like, you know, inherently unpredictable and internally chaotic and multi-perspectival and figured and everything, you know. So we like to think of ourselves as this, like, cohesive person. But actually, like, if you really slow things down, we're like such a hodgepodge of thoughts and feelings and perspectives, and it's just like all constantly mixing together in different ways. So, I mean, I try to, like, normalize what people go through, you know, and my experience has been, you know, equally challenging in that sense, that, you know, having to be a step parent so young, that was quite a learning process. You know, that was like a crash course in growing up.
Right.
You know, because I was still a kid in my head mentally, mm-hmm, at that age.
Yeah, it's even older than that. We're still kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
The last question for today would be, what is the biggest piece of advice that you can give parents?
So, I mean, my biggest challenge has been to grow and evolve, you know, internally to a point where I can sort of step into that role of being a parent. I think when I embarked on this life choice, I was still very much a child in my head. And you can't be a child raising a child, you know, unfortunately. But yeah, it just doesn't work. So I had to, you know, I kind of had to nurture that inner child within myself and let that person know that I'm not abandoning it, that I'm still going to give it space and time, because it's, you know, it's justifiably there. You know, I was only 23.
Right.
So letting it know that I'm not leaving it, but then I'm also going to be kind of bringing in this more kind of adult-like and kind of parental identity to share the space internally. So that was like really important for me to kind of grow into this role. It kind of felt for a while like I had like a split personality. Like I would be, you know, me during the week, and then during the weekend I would be like, you know, Mr. Dad, you know.
So when the child side, when you want to allow the child side to be himself, what does that mean?
That means I'm going out and I'm flying my drone. That means that... That means that, you know, I'm going to the toy aisle in Target and looking at like the different Star Wars stuff. You know, that means that, you know, I'm just hanging out and doing my thing and not necessarily, you know, being like, you know, in dad mode and parent mode. So I guess that's like kind of what I'm maybe some recommendation for parents, you know, is to allow yourself, that space inside of you for all the different parts of you. You know, there's probably that inner child in you, that little boy or that little girl who wants to be heard, that wants to be engaged with. And so making sure that you give that part of you a chance. But also remembering that, you know, you can't be a child raising a child. So trying to make space for that other part of you too. Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
You went through the whole thing and didn't finish your donut.
I know.
To be chewing, we understand. We really appreciate it. This is great.
All right, good.
Okay. We need to have donuts. We need to always have donuts when we do our intros, not just with the interviews, but go ahead.
So this was Michael. Thank you very much, Michael. It was really an amazing chat to me because I think he touched... very important issues like the balance between, you know, being parents and being ourselves, right? So, and all their inner child thing, you know, it reminds me that I'm reading this book by Bruno Bretton.
Well, no, you can't go back and edit. This is a podcast. So, look, he wanted to say Bruno Bettelheim, and it didn't come out well. Everyone at home, say Bruno Bettelheim three times really quickly. Ready?
Bruno Bettelheim.
And he shows up miraculously if you say it.
No, he died, actually.
Well, that's the thing.
The book called Imperfect Parenting, The Imperfect Parent, or Good Enough Parent.
Good Enough Parent.
Yeah, Good Enough Parent. And I think that the main thing that he discusses there is about the balance between, you know, remembering how we were as kids, because it helps a lot to understand our kids. And there are a lot of stuff that this generation of parents is not doing with their kids that previous generation did do. For example,
like what?
Playing. They used to play the same games back in, you know, before our grand-grand-grandmothers.
Yeah, well, wait, what kind of games? What are we talking about?
I don't know, but, you know, he kind of describes...
Okay.
I think dolls, like grown-ups used to play dolls.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, so he talks about how can we make up to that.
I see.
And the only way to do it right now is to kind of understand our kids.
Right.
And to understand that everything that they do has a secret meaning behind it.
Or a secret.
Like subconscious.
Yeah.
Subconscious meaning.
So you know what I actually we early on we asked him about whether he talks about himself in his therapy, and I actually really like that he does. I like the idea that you know, that you get to feel like you understand who he is if you're his client or your patient, whatever it's called, that you get to understand who he is and he's not blank, you know. Right. And I think that there are two schools in therapy about doing that, and I think that especially if you're going to deal with gay clients, it makes a lot of sense for them to be able to identify.
Yeah. What else?
Well, I'll tell you what else. The other thing that I thought was really interesting was the section where he talked about finding a therapist and firing a therapist. Well, we talked about firing a therapist. I think that he was trying to be very proper about how to say it, but I think that he was perhaps understanding how difficult it is to get that right. You know, and I don't know how you do it either, because I think that we got incredibly lucky the second time with our couples therapist. But, you know, one, it's really hard to find one that fits. Two, once you find one, you're not going to know that it fits for a while. So you've now just put in a bunch of sessions.
I disagree, you know.
What, I think you can figure it out immediately?
Not immediately, but after like three sessions, you can know.
Well, even that's a lot. And then wait, but then you have to fire them. And I think that there's some, and in the nicest way, you have to stop seeing them.
Yeah.
And that's hard because, you know, you've just sort of connected with this person, even in one or two sessions, on an emotional level,
Was it hard for you to fire our couple's therapist?
No, that was after the
first
session.
I think it was a mutual decision, and it wasn't. It was the second.
Fine, we did fight about that with our current couple's therapist.
So, yes, I think that... to my opinion, the best way to find a therapist is to see a results on other persons who he's done therapy to. For example, so it's a recommendation, basically. So if your friend says, so if our friends would say, listen, we have problems, blah, 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 with the relationship, we don't have sex, whatever, blah. We would recommend them, and that would be amazing because they see our relationship.
Sure.
They see what it's done to us. They know our story, so you know it's the best way.
I think there's always the possibility that it does have a little bit to do with personalities. We might be, Mark might be a perfect couples therapist for us, and he might be a terrible couples therapist for some other kinds of couples.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I don't know.
And by the way, I found Mark through an ad.
Through an ad?
On the internet.
Oh, really?
Psychology Today or something.
That's hysterical.
So it really was, you know, not what I believed in, but I was open to kind of see, and you know, he was close to home and was convenient. We clicked right away on the first meeting, so it worked out. So anyway, and I think Michael said that too, that even if it doesn't work the first time, it doesn't mean that you should give up on therapy.
Sure.
Because I really believe that it's a study. There's a lot of things that you learn in therapy that you have to learn it somewhere about life.
Yeah.
And just as much as you go to, I don't know, to school and learn other stuff and learn your profession and you know, you get a new job and it takes time until you know all of the details in the job. It's just the same with life, basically. And the more you are open in therapy and you're understanding yourself, the more you can understand other people and your partner and your kids. And anyway, I love
somebody
it.
Somebody likes therapy.
I know.
No, look, I mean, the truth is,
I wrote the book.
Jan is a lot crunchier and more spiritually than I am, but on this one, I actually thoroughly agree. And you know, it's funny. We talked about in the interview. We talked about the kind of communication that you might have with your partner before you have kids. And he talked about setting expectations. And I agree on one hand that would be a great thing to achieve before you have kids. But where I sort of didn't agree is I don't believe it's possible, certainly not with the help, without the help of a third party, a couples therapist, because you have no freaking idea what you're getting into. I mean, we can talk about who's going to change the diapers on Wednesdays, but that's not where the hell comes from. Yeah. And so since you don't really know, I think the idea of setting expectations in advance is a kind of a pipe dream, you know?
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, you have to set the expectations as you go. And that's possibly why it would be so valuable to have a third party that you can work with, as, you know, you and I had some pretty serious things at the beginning in terms of, you know, who's going to do what and which one of us, me, is trying to get out of doing work that, you know, to take care of the kids, etc.
And we also cried.
There was, oh my God, there was crying. Let's see. There was crying, screaming, laughing.
Laughing? I don't remember laughing in the first year.
Laughed. No, we laughed. We absolutely laughed. Come on, some of it was funny. When one of them peed in my mouth, that was funny.
Oh, yeah. And when Adam pooped a line
with the projectile pooping was funny. There were some funny things. Not a lot.
Okay, we have to go.
All right, we have to go. I have to go do my job now, and Jan has to go. Listen, wait, one thing, though. Yeah. I don't know if you mentioned, are we doing all of these in advance before we release them? We're not doing like a, no, we're not, right? We're not doing a, what do you call it, a binge listening model, right? We're going to release these a little bit as
weekly.
We go. Well, so
it's going to be a weekly
podcast. So I think that it would be really valuable if people say, this is a topic I'd really like to hear. Because while we think we have some really good ideas, we want to hear yours as well, especially if you are either about to become parents or you are parents.
Yeah.
Tell us what you're desperate to know, and we'll either pull it out of our own butts or we will get an expert to help.
Yeah, and also if you have something to contribute, you know, if you want to come and talk to us about specific thing, we're pretty much open and we're here for the community. So I know it's a big like statement, but we definitely want to, you know, if there's somebody who wants to talk and help and tell their story or whatever.
Totally.
We're here to listen. Yep. And of course, you are welcome to take a part in this. And of course, contact us on Twitter at Yanir Dekel or on Facebook at Daddy Square.
Why is it at Yanir Dekel? Whatever happened to like at Daddy Square? How come it gets to have your name on it?
He doesn't have a...
We'll talk to Mark about this. Fine.